Welcome to Cool Science Radio. I'm Scott Greenberg.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake. A few years ago, astronomers peering deep into the early universe began noticing some strange, tiny, mysterious objects glowing in deep red light. They've come to be known as little red dots. And they're forcing scientists to rethink what the early universe looked like just a few hundred million years after the Big Bang.
And in a recent article for Scientific American, science journalist Rebecca Boyle explores these puzzling objects and what they might reveal about the formation of the first galaxies and possibly even the earliest supermassive black holes. Rebecca joins us today to talk about these faint red specks and how they're challenging our understanding of the young universe and why astronomers are so excited about what they actually might mean. Rebecca Boyle, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks for having me.
And to start us off, what exactly are these little red dots, and why did astronomers suddenly start noticing them?
Well, the first answer to that is that we don't know what they are. We have some good ideas. Scientists are developing a few good theories for what these things might be. And the reason we started seeing them is because we have a new telescope, the James Webb Space Telescope, which isn't that new, I guess, anymore. It's a few years old now. But JWST is designed to see objects in this very, very far, very, very faint wavelength of light that's been literally stretched out over time as things have expanded all around us, as the universe expands. And so only this telescope is able to see objects in these wavelengths of light where these things are found. And it just means that we just couldn't see them before. And they seem to be everywhere. They're in almost every image the telescope takes of this very far universe, very early universe, which is the same thing. It's if things that are very far away are very, very old because of the way that the cosmos is expanding. But they've been there the whole time in these distant epochs of time. We just couldn't see them until now.
So before we maybe try to figure out what the little red dots are, what is it about the James Webb Telescope's technology that has finally allowed us to see these objects so far away?
So JWST is built to look at this sort of very faint, very far infrared and mid and near infrared light. So if you think about the, you know, a rainbow has kind of all the colors of the visible spectrum, but they sort of match the way that light itself stretches in over time in the universe and as things are traveling. So very, very far, very, very faint old light is in the infrared. So the red part of the entire spectrum of light that goes beyond what we can just visualize. And things that are going very fast or things that are closer to us or things that are coming toward us are shifted into the blue wavelengths of light. So kind of on the opposite side of what you would look at in a rainbow. These are not visible to us in normal optical telescopes or with just our eyes. So we have to do a lot of really cool processing and analysis of these data to be able to understand what we're looking at. But this telescope was designed to do this work, to look at the mid-infrared wavelengths, which are sort of, you know, in the middle of just getting toward where we could maybe see. Some animals can see infrared. This is often described as like heat, you know, warmth, light from warmth, but it's not visible to us in normal telescopes and in optical telescopes like Hubble, for instance.
It's really amazing what the James Webb Space Telescope has allowed us to see. And it was phenomenal to me because it's been out there about 2.5 years now, and it seems like it was just launched. How time flies. So since you said before we went on air that this is your favorite thing to talk about, these hard to explain, hard to understand, complex timelines. So if you can help us go back and recapture. So the Big Bang occurred about 13.8 billion years ago, right?
Yes.
And then these little red dots are 100 million light years more recent. Is that right?
Yes. I have to think about the numbers here. Yeah. So these things are seen from a time when the universe was about 250 to 300 million years old. So this is, you know, 13.5 billion years in the past. And that means the universe is still, it's very different than the universe now. Like we call it the local universe, sort of what's around us right now, what we can see that looks like it's close by and only a few light years away. So technically this would be 13.5 or so billion light years away from us because we're seeing it now. And it's as it appeared 300 or so million years after the Big Bang.
Because it takes that long to travel to a point where we can, or to catch up to now time.
I mean, it's actually like, it's sadly like more complicated than that even, because it's the age of the universe is not equivalent to the distance that these things are found, because the universe is expanding and it's accelerating that expansion because of dark energy, we think. And so it's not a totally perfect equivalency. Like, that's, the universe is 13.8 billion years old, but this light has been traveling for longer than that, sort of, in terms of the way that we can see it. It's further away than that would indicate.
So it's all kind of proportional, but in a mathematically incredibly complex way. And that's why Scott and I, for example, aren't astrophysicists.
I mean, I'm not either. I will caveat that by saying I am also not an astrophysicist, but this is what I write about for the most part. And so I'm trying to figure out how to describe these things in a way that's both accurate, but also like not nonsensical.
Yeah, what a great challenge. Do you have a science background by any chance?
No, I went to space camp as a kid and, you know, just lifelong interest. But no, I have a degree in history, actually.
Okay. Well, this is kind of history, if you think about it.
It kind of is. That's true. That's how I think about it.
I mean, you're kind of looking into a time machine right now.
That's exactly right. That's why I love astronomy. It literally is a time machine, basically.
Yeah, because by the time this information gets to us, it's been billions of years old.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Even if it is expanding. So one intriguing possibility is that these dots actually may contain supermassive black holes. What would be so puzzling for astronomers about that concept?
Well, there's a couple of reasons why this would be weird. One is that black holes have been thought to form in a certain way for a long time. And only in the last few years have we sort of developed these new theories. There's an astronomer at Yale, Priyamvada Natarajan, who sort of initiated this theory of direct collapse black holes. She's one of the people who initiated this theory that black holes can maybe form in a way that is different from the sort of classic, you know, a star explodes, a star dies, sort of like flumps back onto itself, is so incredibly dense and heavy in this very, very compact area that its gravity overwhelms everything around it and everything is sort of sucked into what we call a black hole. But there could be this other way that they can form, which is that they form almost like how stars form, where there's a lot of sort of hot gas spiraling around and it condenses and cools and then comes together very rapidly and collapses into a star that then ignites and undergoes nuclear fusion. But these things might represent this almost mishmash between two different aspects of those stories, where they're not really a star, but they're not really a black hole either in the way that we think black holes are found now in the universe. So there's a chance that they're black hole baby pictures, that this is like the very, very earliest stages of the sort of black holes that power galaxies today. So not just your everyday neighborhood black hole, which there are lots of those, but a supermassive black hole that becomes a quasar that powers the heart of these massive galaxies that are found everywhere in the universe. And we've struggled for a while with understanding how those things come to be, because it takes a long time. Like, it should take a while for the universe to grow enough stars and kind of collect them and shepherd them around through probably dark matter halos that are sort of shaping the way things come together and to grow big enough. So these things were found earlier on than we thought was possible based on physics, based on the way that mass grows in the early universe, based on the way that dark matter is moving around, dark energy is shifting at that time. And so there's been a lot of stories and kind of discussions about how James Webb is breaking astronomy and breaking physics. And that's because it's finding these things that seem to be really massive and really, really bright way earlier than we thought was possible. And it turns out that they really are massive and they really are bright, but they're probably different than we thought they were. They have a different nature than we expected. And so that's why it's possible for them to exist at this early age.
That's cool, which I guess is why this is called Cool Science Radio. So what you're really describing is you're talking about going around and collecting these stars together. We're really talking about galaxies. I mean, my basic understanding of what a galaxy is a collection of stars and planets. And I'm wondering if we're describing this, the James Webb Telescope is breaking some theories of what astronomers previously thought. How are we challenging these existing models of how galaxies have formed? What assumptions are the astronomers making now?
We think that these are just sort of a new object or a new phase maybe of existence of objects that we all know and love, like black holes and galaxy clusters and galaxies themselves. The real answer is that we're not sure. Like, it's fun. It's a great time to be working on this problem because there's so much new data. There's more than anybody can possibly go through. So it's a great time to be an astrophysicist, either in theory or in observation, because there's so much new information on both sides of that. And everyone's kind of scrambling to figure out, you know, what are these things? What is their nature? Why are there so many of them? Why does only this telescope see them? Or do we have any locally? Do they die out at a certain point? They seem to. And that doesn't mean that they go away, but it means that they might evolve and sort of transform into something else that we see in other wavelengths of light. So we need to follow up and use other telescopes, look at them later on at different times in the universe's history, which we can do because we have, you know, entire classes of telescopes looking at almost every wavelength of light right now from space and on Earth. So there's just a lot of really exciting stuff going on. And every astronomer is excited about this stuff because somebody will figure it out. And it will be a very big deal when the community starts to coalesce around what these things are.
Yeah. What are the other theories that are taking place right now? You talk a bit about it in the article in Scientific American this month.
Yeah. So there are a few ideas that, you know, are still popular among certain people. Some people have kind of dismissed, you know, some people originally thought the sort of first idea that these things kind of had was that they were galaxies. They were what we assume are galaxies like today, where they're just this large collections of stars, and they maybe were very young, or maybe they were very hot, and they could also be, you know, very dusty, which might explain why they look very red, because it's also a little weird that they look red instead of blue. Baby stars are usually very blue, and young galaxies are also very blue. So with the caveat that it would look red through this telescope because of the stretching of light over time. But we know how to sort of suss out that information and understand its true colors. And yet they still look like really red, which is very weird. That theory is still, some people still think that that's the case, that these are just very early, very bright galaxies. But a lot of people have moved away from that idea in part because the timing, again, like these things would have needed hundreds of millions of years to create that many stars and ignite all of them and then have them some of them die and turn into new stars. So the timing is a little off. So that's why that theory has sort of fallen a little bit out of favor. Some people think that there are these other strange objects, like they're just very, you know, very fast spinning black holes, or they're rapidly rotating around something else. And some of them might actually not be that far away. Some of them are interlopers that are, you know, sort of hiding or masquerading as further away objects. So there's still some work to be done to like sort of figure out how they're all turning up. But I think one thing that's interesting that I learned reporting this feature is that they're not all the same. Like they seem to have a whole spectrum of characteristics and behaviors like stars and like galaxies and like planets, which is kind of cool because at some point we might be able to sort of figure out, you know, here is the whole spectrum of objects that are considered little red dots, and some are this way and some are that way, but they're all a dot. So we're still getting at those details, I think.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with science journalist Rebecca Boyle. She's talking about a recent article that she wrote for Scientific American. It's called Exotic Black Hole Stars Could Explain the Mystery of Little Red Dots. So little red dots, synonymous with baby black holes, possibly. How do black holes, if they are baby black holes or baby galaxies, how do they typically react throughout their lifetimes? I mean, I suppose this is at the heart of some of the question, but if it expands into a full-blown galaxy that we can see that's easy to detect, there it is. There's the galaxy. But some I would imagine extinguish. Do you know what the sort of the conditions there are, the different components of what causes a galaxy to extinguish?
So do you extinguish, by extinguish, do you mean like turning off star formation, or the galaxy itself dies out?
I guess the galaxy itself.
I think as far as we know, galaxies sort of continue to form and evolve throughout their entire life cycles. So if these things are supermassive black hole babies, basically, if little red dots are like the infancy stage of a supermassive black hole, then what would happen is that over time, it would sort of shed this outer puffy atmosphere that they seem to have that makes them almost star-like, but not quite star-like. To me, it's like, imagine like blowing a bubble, you know, outside with a wand on a summer day, and this thing sort of gets bigger and it's a little shaky, and the sort of more unstable it gets, the larger the bubble gets, then it can burst pretty easily. And that's how I visualize this. That's not exactly the right analogy for the physics that are happening in these things, but it's a useful way to think about the structure that we might be seeing, where there's this like inner sort of seed of a black hole that is growing, and there's a shroud around it that's unstable, that's maybe dusty and pretty energetic, and eventually it's going to blow away. It's going to fade, and this black hole will probably consume some of that and consume some of the other material around it in these young galaxy clusters. But eventually it will become this giant thing that kind of forms the heart of galaxies. And as galaxies rotate, which they do, just like we're on a spiral arm of a rotating spiral galaxy, the galaxy sort of spins around the central supermassive black hole. And that black hole will continue feeding on all the material that is in the galaxy that surrounds it. But there's this exchange of energy and momentum, and there's a lot of really complicated physics that are happening inside of galaxies. One reason why this is a cool theory is that this can help us understand the early parts of that process, because we haven't really been able to figure that out. Like, why do these things exist? How did they get so big? How did that happen so quickly? That's why I mentioned the Yale astronomer earlier, who works on these sort of direct collapse black hole scenarios, where like something had to happen to make these things get giant really fast. And maybe it's that they formed in this sort of unusual way that we'd never seen before until this telescope.
So we're talking about the James Webb telescope, and you also mentioned that we now have some terrestrial telescopes. I assume the Vera C. Rubin in Chile is online now and probably given us a lot of data. You know, I think that as we get more data, and maybe even as our technology continues to evolve and expand, that we will eventually, I hope, not we, our astronomers, with the new data and new technology, they're going to eventually be able to solve this mystery, I assume, right? If we come up with a theory
that's the hope. Yeah, that's the hope. And that's sort of what happened, you know, with quasars. We didn't know what quasars were when we first saw them. And there was a lot of interesting theory about what they could be and why are these things so loud in like certain, you know, radio spectrum and a different light spectrum. These objects were sort of weird and unexpected. And after a lot of very careful analysis, new observations, people sort of figured out that they're emitting X-rays because of how fast they're spinning. And these are supermassive black holes. And they're far away, and they're sort of emitting this light through other objects that stretches that light and distorts it a little bit. But we've learned now what quasars pretty much are. And like other objects, they have sort of a spectrum of characteristics that all are alike, you know, no two are the same. But we can kind of identify them based on some of these different traits. And that's the goal for these little red dots, is like, can we kind of say that these are a thing we can now describe? Maybe they're like baby black holes. Maybe they're infant galaxies that are bursting with stars, and the star formation rate is extremely crazy and high. That's why they're so big so early on. That's still one prevailing theory for these things. But I think the community is sort of coalescing around the idea that they might be these stellar black hole objects, black hole stars, and figuring out what that is like and how those things evolve is the next kind of big question, I think.
Well, it's discoveries just like this that reminds us that the universe still holds plenty of surprises. And as a science journalist covering space, just curious, what excites you the most right now about what we're learning from the Webb telescope?
I think the fact that the early universe is so different than the present day, is super interesting for so many reasons, because it implies all kinds of things that are fun for physicists, that particles may have been different at that time. There's some asymmetry between regular matter and dark matter or antimatter that was maybe changing at the early universe times. Maybe stars are forming extremely rapidly because there's so much more energy in the system inherently early on, because the Big Bang just happened. I mean, it all is relative. 300 million years is a long time, but in the history of the universe, it's not. And so maybe the just energy budget of the universe is different at that time. Maybe these objects can only form under certain conditions. These little red dots can only be made when the universe is a baby universe, as opposed to right now. And so I think it's fun to think about how much has changed, you know, over time. And being able to think about that is such a crazy thing that we can do. Like, we can actually ask these questions about what happened, like, right at the very beginning, and then what happened a little bit after that, and what were the first stars even like, and how did they change the course of everything that happened after them? And I think we're really getting to the finer details of those questions, which is just amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Before we let you go, we need to wrap up, but I'm curious about what else you're writing right now, what we can expect to see from you either in Scientific American or whoever else you write for.
I'm also writing a lot about what are called population 3 stars, which is a misnomer because those are the first stars in the universe. And they probably ignited sometime around the same time period of these little red dots. There was some very early discussion about whether those were population 3 stars, but that's not likely to be the case for lots of reasons. But yeah, just looking at what those stars were like and can we ever actually see them? And that's an open question. And I'm also writing about sort of general astrophysics questions that are happening with the Veeroon Observatory, which is such an amazing instrument. That thing is going to change everything we think we know.
Well, Rebecca Boyle, we are excited to see what you write next. It is absolutely a pleasure having you here on Cool Science Radio with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.